welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com, podcasting at SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and a whole bunch of other places that are too numerous to mention, at least right now, but you get the idea. When you're listening to the SoundCloud podcast, which I highly recommend because sometimes we go much longer than the 50 minutes on the radio broadcast, you will see a little grocery cart in the upper right-hand corner of the SoundCloud player, and that takes you to our guest's website so that you can continue your evolutionary process, continue to get inspiration, education, edification, and all of the other good things that go along with being a part of this radio program. And if you'd like to be a part of what we're doing here, if what we're doing resonates with you and you'd like to support us financially, we do have a PayPal and Patreon account, both on the homepage and the missions page of richarddugan.com. So hopefully you will find some good things here, good things at our guests' websites. And today is no exception to that. We're going to be talking with a very interesting woman who is going to share with us the aspects of, I guess the best way to put this, her work, the work that she does, and it's basically Cosmic Arts Astrological Services with Joy Walensky. Joy, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
It's my pleasure. Good to talk to you.
As we have entered 2020, which, by the way, I have and have been doing so for the last few months, even in 2019, I've been declaring 2020 as the year of perfect vision. And we're not talking about when you go to your ophthalmologist or optometrist. We're talking about that inner vision that we are trying to clear up, if you will, so that we can move through our path without as many stumbles, if you will. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I do.
And I think that you are going to be able to help us to do some of that here. And we'll talk about some of the, because I think they're important because they're important to other people as well. Certainly we have our typical holidays throughout the calendar year, whether they're federal holidays, state holidays, whether they're just, you know, days that we designate as a holiday. You know, today's a holiday. I don't, you know, I got no name for it, but you know, I'm taking a holiday. But there are also some that have go back hundreds, if not thousands of years, that have formed the basis, in a manner of speaking, for the various civilizations that have been on this planet. And in particular, because it's near and dear to my heart, the Celtic traditions. Now, some would say pagan. All right, we can use that word too. And in this case, with this broadcast, we are celebrating at least in the early part of February of 2020, February 2nd, Candlemas, and not many people know about that. We can get into that, but I want to get into first your introduction to astrology, which if I have the story correct, has to do with a 90-year-old astrologer who, if you will, sort of lit the fire under you.
Well, that's my personal story of astrology. The story of astrology proper begins perhaps 40,000 years ago, because if you go into the caves at Lascaux, where ancient peoples, probably an ancient shaman who was also an artist, created representations of wild game, there's an interesting set of stars behind the animals. And so I think in a rudimentary form, astrology is quite old. I actually had one of my first experiences with astronomy when I was young. I was actually 14 years old, and I went to an island off the coast of Venezuela to scuba dive. There was no electricity at night, and it was dark, Richard. We would take a jeep out to the derelict lighthouse on the leeward side of the island each night, and then the headlights would go off. And the sky was so bright. It was as though the sky itself was painted in an ultra white and brushed with powdered diamond. Falling stars, they fell like rain. They fell constantly. I couldn't believe it because I was a city girl and I had no idea all that was up there. I actually saw the Purple Horsehead Nebula with my naked eye. This was near the equator. There was the galactic center, which sort of looks like a scar in the Milky Way. And it really changed my heart to see all that because it shows you just how dynamic the universe is. So those nights, I got to see almost the exact sky that many of the ancients saw. Now, imagine how it was back then. I mean, in America especially, we suffer from a serious case of stimuli overload. You know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
We're exposed to thousands of ads each day. We're swimming in it. And in between, there's TV and social media and then our stupid little devices. And we get a lot out of metropolitan modern life, but we lose our connection with the modern natural world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But thousands of years ago, the Earth was extremely dark, and the sky was, I think, the most amazing show on Earth. It still is, of course, but we just don't get to see it.
Right, right.
Now, the ancient astronomers were also astrologers, and they looked up and they did something with the stars. They grouped them into clusters, and since the human mind searches for meaning in what it sees, they said, well, this cluster makes a bull, and they called it Taurus. And this cluster makes an archer, and they called it Sagittarius. This cluster over here makes scales, and they called that Libra. And they identified 12 constellations that make up the zodiac from the sign of Aries to Pisces. Now, these 12 constellations are very special for astrologers because they wrap around the Earth like a belt. And then we look at where the planets are in the constellations. All the planets in the solar system, sun and moon, are luminaries, but we call them planets just for ease of speaking. And even some asteroids in the asteroid belt and the occasional comet, okay? Then we interpret the location of the planets in the zodiac as well as their relationship to each other. So when you come for a chart reading, I'll have a map. It's a piece of paper with symbols in a circle, and that'll be in front of me. And it's sort of a snapshot of where all the planets were in the constellations at the moment of your birth. And that tells me a great deal about you, your basic personality, your gifts, your struggles.
Yeah.
Maybe what your current issues are and what path makes the most sense for you. So the chart doesn't really show destiny, or it's not predictive, not like it used to be.
Yeah.
But it does show how things are likely to unfold.
So,
it's about likelihoods, really.
Sure. So when one seeks out an astrologer, and I'm going to broaden it, a medium, an intuitive, a psychic, et cetera, a card reader, whatever the modality happens to be, is it best, in spite of the fact that, yes, please, Joy, tell me what's going to happen in March of 2021. I need to know what's going to happen then. That's not what it's about. It's more, as I have observed, and this is where the question is, I need to come from the perspective that Joy is going to confirm what I already know. but I don't have the confidence yet in my own intuition, in my own still small voice, as it were, to trust it. I think I need an outside source to help me to maybe put some understanding to it, but it's more of a confirmation. You're not giving anybody anything new that they don't already know. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, and I would also call it framing or reframing and giving a vocabulary and, yeah, sharpening what you already know.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's very true.
You've been doing this for how long? How long have you been providing people with this information?
I have something more to say about that.
Oh, please,
that.
Go ahead.
I've actually... I think of astrology as the comfort business because it helps to organize the experience of life. And as you were just talking about, it gives clarity and it cuts through the crap. I have a story. A client came to me recently and she said she didn't understand what was going on with her. A lot of people come in saying, oh my gosh, I'm going crazy. I don't get it. Why is the hitting the fan.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Go ahead.
She was itching even.
Mm-hmm.
I won't tell you where, but it was like she was itching herself raw.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor couldn't find anything wrong. So her relationship wasn't right. She wanted to quit her job. She didn't recognize herself. Now, the wording she was using, the actual keywords, kept referring me to a particular planet in her chart. It's the revolutionary planet, the planet that rules Aquarius, the planet of innovation and invention. So I knew there was a revolution going on inside of her, and it was threatening to throw her life upside down because she was resisting it.
Mm.
She wasn't listening.
Yeah.
And the planet was trying to bring a revolution, and it was so frustrated that it was resorting to making her itch.
Wow.
And the doctor couldn't find anything wrong because it was a message from the part of her mind that wanted to burn the place down. And so all the strange and disruptive things that she presented with that seemed so disparate to her were actually just one thing.
Mm.
That's clarity.
Yeah.
Oh, all this that seems like a big fat mess, that seems like nothing is related to each other, it's always related.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't take, I followed up with her, it didn't take much change in her life to make the itching go away, but she had to attend to it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so astrology gets down to the bottom of it, comfort organization.
Yeah. I have, it's been interesting. There was a time when I was seeing this one gal in Phoenix, a tarot card reader. And I actually was going there, okay, I need information, you know. And then the longer I saw her, the more often I went to see her, I began to make that transition from give me something I don't know to confirm for me what I already know, until I got to a point where I don't have necessarily the desire. Now, my wife every once in a while likes to do it. She finds it fun more than anything else, but also informative. But now it's for me, it's like I almost don't care whether I get confirmation. I'm actually to the point now where I just want to enjoy the ride. Surprise me. Surprise me. And of course, it ain't hard to do because there's no such thing as certainty in this world. Absolutely none. And then there's also another part of this. I came up with the two C's. Now, one of the C's has to do with what we do on this program, providing people with choices, which is also the title of my book. And the other is the one constant in the universe that people have been brainwashed into believing is bad. We need to fear it. We need to do everything
change.
We can to stop it. Yes, is change. And yet, you made an interesting observation. from astronomy, and I use this as my example. When you look through the Hubble telescope, or in your case, through the naked eye, and you look at the cosmos whirling around and things smashing into one another and things exploding and things spinning and whirling and on and on and on and on, our reaction is, wow, ooh, that's pretty. It's kind of like watching fireworks, right? And on the microcosmic level, kind of the same reaction when we're watching subatomic particles move about. And I personally, even as a kid, when I started learning about this stuff in school, in biology, about the molecules and the protons, electrons, and the neutrons, and nucleus, and all this kind of stuff, I'm going, that looks an awful lot like the spinning planets around the sun, okay? And, and of course, people, no, Richard, you're mixing metaphors. And I'm thinking,
No.
Because there's as above,
that's
so
exactly
below.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Exactly. So, but we look at that also as, wow, oh, pretty cool. But at this level, you and I were talking, I'm looking at my screen, a microphone in front of me. It ain't ooh and ah, it's oh my God, or woohoo. I mean, we're just, it's one extreme or the other. And it's like, I've begun the process of saying, you know what? It's no different than the macro or the microcosmic world.
Okay, but that's easy for you to say.
That's what someone said to me not too long ago.
Hold on. No, well, I have some experience with personality types because I'm an astrologer. I love change. I'm right on board with you, but there are certain signs that, well, let's say the sign of the bull, Taurus, someone comes in with quite a bit of Taurus in their chart, and they are spending all of their time trying to keep things from changing. I was listening to a man, I'm not going to say his name, because I don't want to, he's controversial, and I think he's an idiot, but he was saying, I don't like change. I don't see how much change we're supposed to take before we flip out. I'm paraphrasing. And of course I look and he's a triple Taurus. Okay. These people really dislike it. They equate change with disruption of the peace. And I had a very close relationship with someone who was heavy Taurus, and if she thought that you were disrupting her peace, whether or not you actually were, but if she thought you were, talk about a bull in a china shop. I mean, doors were slamming, she was stomping. If she had been able to have smoke come out of her nose, she would have. But Capricorn is sort of the same way. It's a personality type. In fact, I did some research on the personalities and why people vote the way they do, and I found out that through Google Scholar and peer-reviewed articles that if you boil down to one word, why people vote Democrat or Republican, it is about resistance to change. People who vote Democrat like change or welcome it, and people who vote Republican are trying to keep things from changing. Their interest in change is very low.
It's interesting because I worked for 15 years in the 80s, early 90s for a Christian radio station. And that's all I ever heard was, we want to go back to the way things were. And basically, they wanted to go back to the way things were in the 1950s. And it's like, yeah, there were some good things about the 50s, but there were also some really bad things about the 50s. I didn't grow up then.
Well, how about a whites only water fountain? Yeah, there, I mean, this kind of thing is so gross, but, you know, that's part and parcel of trying to keep things from changing. Now, I have learned over the years that each sign is equally valid. And if the sun is in the constellation of Taurus when you're born, and I'm interacting with you, I'm going to try not to make you uncomfortable. You know, my approach with somebody who's resistant to change is going to be a softer touch and different. However, most of the people who come to see me are a certain personality type. If you like astrology and metaphysics, you tend to be somebody who is comfortable with change and is actually seeking it.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I had a client once when I was working at a little metaphysical store, and I got readings because people were coming in off the streets. And I was telling this one woman she was having a revolutionary transit. And I started talking to her without thinking much about the chart I was looking at. I was sort of being insensitive. And so I was touting the change and the revolution that was coming and the awakening and the enlightenment that was there for the taking. And she had really had enough of it. And she said, what if I don't want to awaken? I don't want to awaken. How do I stop it?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And wow. I said, oh, my gosh. I mean, I wasn't reading the signals. I wasn't looking because I was assuming that she would think, oh, cool. You know, I was newer to the whole reading business back then. Yeah. But, yeah,
well,
there are differences, and people need comfort.
Well, absolutely. Oh, I remember working, again, back in the 80s, early 90s, and I would hear these stories over and over again about Armageddon and the end of the world and the second coming and the Antichrist and on and on and on and on. And again, I'd only been hearing these stories for maybe 7 or 8, maybe 9 years. And I was getting bored with that story. So I actually, I said, you know, is there any way that I can assist in bringing about the conclusion of these stories you're telling? Is there any way that I can bring about the coming of the Antichrist, of the Battle of Armageddon, so that we can move on to the next part of the story, 1,000 years of peace, okay? Because I was, and again, I'd only been hearing that particular story for only a few years, and I was bored out of my mind. Like, God, can you come up with something else? Golly! Yeah, and I kind of feel that way with people, as you've described, who are not wanting change. Now, this is what is so fascinating to me, especially in the news, when you hear the economic news. And it doesn't matter what the numbers are. The numbers are irrelevant because they could be fantastic, over-the-top numbers, okay? And the economists are still not happy. There's still fear. And usually the reports usually end with this phrase, dot, 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 in these uncertain times, to which I ask the question, could you tell me when was the last time we had certain times? Rhetorical question. The answer is never. And it's one of those aspects. Now, I show respect to the woman you're talking about who doesn't want the awakening, doesn't want the enlightenment, doesn't want the change because it causes an upheaval in her world, and she doesn't know how to deal with that or handle that.
Well, that's exactly right, if I can jump in here.
Go
because
ahead.
One of the reasons that Taurus likes peace and doesn't like disruption is because it's a fixed earth sign, and part and parcel to that is that they really are limited in how many defenses they have when things change and how much they can pivot. I mean, it doesn't occur to them like it might occur to me to change on a dime. I mean, I have also some clients who are extremely what we call mutable, almost to a fault, where they never run out of ideas. I mean, they just don't run out of ideas about how to change and adapt with the flow of life.
Yeah.
So they really don't inside themselves have much to cope.
Mm-hmm.
It's about coping. And when you realize that, you realize why they would want to keep everything as it is as much as possible.
And because the reality, the objective reality is that everything changes. I mean, we're changing as we talk here. Governments change, religions change, economic systems change, educational system change, all of the institutions in our civilization change over
You might say
the years.
Everything's in decay.
Well, in decay, but also in construction. I loved this, what someone shared on the program not too long ago about that. They said that if you want to, you do not want to destroy the current institutions. Do not go after the institutions to destroy them. Create new institutions that make the old ones obsolete, and they will, using your word, decay of their own rottenness, if you will, of their own inefficiencies, of their lack of serving the people. And so, you know, I'm not sitting here saying, okay, we need to tear down the government in D.C. and start over again. That has its own entropy, just like everything else does. I mean, we are in entropy, if I'm using that word correctly, as human beings. I mean, when we're born into this world, as the phrase has gone, we're born to die. You know, as my father would say, eat, drink, and be merry in moderation, because nobody gets out of this world alive. I've never known anyone who has escaped that, save the story, if you will, of one. Okay. And I'm not sure that I buy into that story anymore. Be that as it may, astrology has been around, as you said, for, what'd you say, 40,000 years?
Yeah, the first astrology book, which was a reference book, and it was on a clay tablet, is about 5,000 years old.
Okay. And go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, it's one of those things that again, another modality for helping us and guiding us. I have described Vedic astrology, which I know you do Western astrology. But you used the word map, and I used the same word to describe what Vedic astrology does. It lays out a path, okay, that shows certain conditions that you may come across as you're traveling along your path, on your journey. For example, 500 miles down the road, there could be a rainstorm. Now, you can take an umbrella, or you can take some rain gear to protect yourself. But, you know, if that doesn't bother you, then don't take anything. But that's kind of the way it lays it out. I'm wondering, is that, because the way you described current modern Western astrology almost sounds like the same thing, that you're laying out this map
absolutely.
Of conditions.
Yeah. Yeah, there's two different types of astrology in the Western world. There's something called personal astrology, which is more what I do. It's how can you help the individual?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you help the person, give support to the individual psyche to grow and evolve? And then there's something called mundane astrology. And this is the astrology that has to do with places and events. You know, America has a birth chart.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, there's no time, but we have a day that a city is created or a country is created or a business.
Yeah.
I mean, when people talk about the aspects of a business, they're really originally talking about its natal chart.
Interesting. Yeah. I know that even my Vedic astrologer, David Hawthorne, and I, we've even debated that subject, you know, not vociferously, mind you, but just, okay, so, yeah, you don't actually have a time of the birth of the United States, but we are going to accept that July 4th in 1776, we'll consider that to be the birth date of the nation. And so forth. One of the other things that I found fascinating, he also has shared, and I'm curious about your perspectives on this, in terms of certain times of the year, it's better to do certain things than other times of the year. Case in point, it has been said that November is the worst time of the year to hold elections, not just because you're heading into the cold times, but from an astrological and even a metaphysical perspective. We shouldn't be holding our elections in November. It should be more maybe in the spring or early summer.
Well, I think voter participation, I think this is more pragmatic. Voter participation would be higher if the weather was better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it would also be higher if it wasn't a work day. Well, I mean, of course, all this is done on purpose, but let me give sort of an example of how astrology does embody the natural world. So let's take a couple of examples. The sun moves through the constellation of Aries in the spring. All right, it's the first sign of the zodiac, and it happens when there's life popping back up from the depths of winter. Nature is vital again. It's moving forward, and people are eager because it's mating season. Well, all creatures are. So the babies born at that time seem to absorb that state and the state of the natural world. So Aries is a personality that absolutely insists on being alive and impatiently staying on the move. You can't keep them down. It's a vital sign. It's a vibrant personality. And it's really got something to prove about its own potency. You know, it's macho, even the women.
Mm.
It loves competition. It loves the fight. And just like springtime and life in the spring, it says, I'm here, I'm alive, I'm first. Okay, so let's go to the opposite side of the zodiac, the seventh sign, Libra. Now, this personality emphasizes balance, diplomacy, and, let's say, social skills, charm. Well, these traits reflect a couple of things that are going on at that time of the year. During the sun's visit to the constellation of Libra, you have a point at which the days and nights are perfectly even. And the weather's cooling. The harvest has been brought in. People are in close quarters. So social skills have to be heightened. And somehow, for some reason, babies born at that time have the traits that are best for the season and the social conditions.
Hmm.
Why?
Interesting. Interesting.
We don't know.
Yeah. No, but that's very interesting. I hadn't really thought about that in that context.
You see, astrology, it's based on an ancient worldview that looked at the entire universe as a single organism that's imbued with life by a celestial intelligence. Okay? Everything's connected. We can't get away from that. And we're shaped by what happens around us. And we know this on a mundane level. We can't go through childbirth or a romantic relationship where we're well loved or battle in war without being changed by it.
Mm.
And try as you might, even time changes you, even if you have no experiences outside yourself.
Let me ask
you. Astrology takes this idea to cosmic heights. And now it says that the positions of the planets in the moment you're born is an encounter like that that is so powerful that it acts as a prism through which we see all of our experiences, and it shows from that moment on what we're predisposed to select from what life offers us. You know, the psychologist, the late great Carl Jung, he was an excellent astrologer. He spent all of his evenings on it. And he said something really great, and I'm paraphrasing. He said, we're born at a given moment in a given place, and like a vintage year of wine, we have the qualities of that year and of the season in which we're born. And astrology doesn't claim anything else.
Hmm.
How does it work? That's a mystery, the same way anything numinous is a mystery. How does prayer work?
Yeah.
How does meditation work? How does the spiritual world and the spiritual life work?
I love this answer to that question. I don't know. I just know that it does. And that's the answer that was given by some folks on this program when challenged by when we used to be live and taking phone calls. That was the answer that they would usually give to cynics, to critics, to people who were of a particular mindset to try to undermine the particular guest's philosophy and what have you and the work that they do. It's like, I have no clue as to why it works. All I know is that it does.
Yeah. Well, talk about, I get a little bit tired with those people. Somebody wrote, my channel on YouTube is called Secrets from an Astrologer's Desk, and these are my astrology videos. Mm-hmm. And so I get comments from the audience, and somebody wrote me finally. This is the only question I got in all these years. And she said, what would you say to a skeptic who was saying that astrology was nonsense? And I said, nothing. I wouldn't say anything. The truth is that most skeptics, in my experience, are vampires. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really don't have any curiosity. What they want to do is to upset you and then to sort of drink the energy that you're making.
Yeah, yeah.
And if somebody was truly curious and they said, well, you know, you're really smart. You're well educated. What is it here? What is it about this? Why are you interested in it? Then I would say, well, and probably give them some background and my experience. But in the end, it does come down. It's a crazy idea. It really is. I mean, I have to admit that I have been doing this for 33 years, and I still sometimes, especially with the astrology cards, because I have a deck of cards that I use with one particular client because she has very specific questions and is sort of a hybrid between astrology and the tarot. Mm-hmm. And these cards are so accurate, and the interpretations are so right on. And yet, as I'm shuffling, sometimes the thought goes through my mind, this can't possibly be true. This can't work. I mean, I still have a skeptical bone. And then I go, but it's beautiful, and it works beautifully. Mm-hmm. And so I go back to it. Yeah. So, yeah, I do. I do still say, oh, come on.
Yeah. And the results that you get for this specific client are certainly beneficial to them. And ergo, you know, where's the problem? And it reminds me, before we go to break here, of Edgar Cayce, a staunch mm-hmm. Christian who, regardless of his personal, conscious, philosophical beliefs, he still did the channeling. And that's something that I've always been fascinated by. And when I would meet different people through this Christian station I worked for back in the 80s and early 90s, and I would hear some of their perspectives on life and the spirit world and this and that and the other thing, that was completely counter to the doctrine and dogma that they're supposed to believe, I'm thinking, well, maybe there's still hope for the world yet, because at least these people are willing to consider other possibilities, because look at the things that they're incorporating into their philosophy, regardless of what they're being told they're supposed to believe. Mm-hmm. And I loved what one author, who is actually a musician, a Christian musician, his name was John Fisher, and he'd written this one particular book, and I was interviewing him, and he told me he was sitting in his writer's garret there in New England watching the fall leaves as they fell and so forth and so on. And the question came to him, which I thought was one of the most profound observations of self. He grew up in the Jesus movement of the 60s and 70s, all right? The question was, is what I believe what I've been told to believe, or what I have chosen to believe, what I believe, what I have come to understand? And I thought, and we had a conversation on that, and I thought, wow, that's...
Yeah.
That's,
you know, that,
pretty impressive.
That's the core.
Yeah.
Because there are people, like, let's go back to the skeptics, who are skeptical about astrology or God or metaphysics. But they're not skeptical about the person who told them that was garbage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so it's a real trap. Either question everything or question nothing.
Or question nothing, yeah,
you
exactly.
You know, keep it consistent.
Absolutely.
Everyone does have to ask themselves that.
Absolutely.
You know, where did I get this idea?
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems to me that there are ideas that I have had since the beginning. You know, tabula rasa? I don't know. Seems like there are some ideas I have that may even be counter to the ones my parents or my family have that are so old that maybe I was born with them.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's entirely possible. We're going to continue our conversation with Joy Walensky, and we're going to talk about the work that she is doing. I'm going to give you some information here as we're talking. As we go to break, I want to let you know that the information that you can garner, she mentioned her channel on YouTube, the Cosmic Arts Astrological Services, that's on YouTube. She's also on Facebook, and the Facebook location, Cosmic Arts Astrological Services, we encourage you to go to either or both of those locations. I'm Richard Hoog, and this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be right back.
Tell me your story.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I'm here with Joy Walensky, and we're talking about the work that she does as an astrologer. I'm curious as to, is there any intuitive input you give to people who come to you, say, asking questions, or when you are giving them a reading?
You know, any astrologer has to be a highly intuitive person. I mean, the level of synthesis that's required is just outrageous. If you don't have intuition, I don't see how you do it. Because you have to fill in the gaps. Each planet in the chart is telling a story. The person is manifesting the energies of the planets, and then you have to put in... The chart is sort of like your genetics, okay? It's pure potential. And then you've got the epigenetics, how the environment changes the gene. So that's why it's so important to have the person there, and why astrological reports based on your birth data can only go so far, because when you actually have an astrologer there, I mean, if she's good, she'll be able to keep sort of gathering in all the information and putting it into a whole picture and creating the story. And knowing that story is why you can then imagine how the future is going to unfold.
Is it also true that even with, specifically with, say, quote-unquote psychic readings, where an intuitive, you go to an intuitive and they just kind of sit there and they pick up on your energy and so on and so forth, is it still true, even with astrology, that everything is in motion, as we've just talked about, it's constant change, and that if I come to you today and then I come to you in a month, say over a particular time period, that the information, the map, is going to change, or will it always be the same because of the base information that you start with?
Okay, that's a good question, because the snapshot of the heavens at the moment of your birth never changes.
Okay.
That's your genetics.
That makes sense.
But the moment after you're born, the transiting planets, the ones that are moving in the sky right now, continue to trigger the relationships among the planets in that natal chart. So you're never in a moment without being triggered and changed.
Okay.
Never. Even if there aren't any events going on outside you, there's things going on inside.
Yeah.
And then we bring in events. We actually create them by that, like I said, the prism, the process of selection. You know, life doesn't really happen to us. You know, we have a process of selection where we are blind to certain options and opportunities, and we're very aware of others. In the chart, that is represented by what's known as the rising sign. And that's the sign, the constellation that's on the first house cusp. And this is the main part of the chart that tells about that selection process, what we're blind to and what we see. I mean, you see people sometimes who are like a lot of fun, right?
Yeah.
They're enthusiastic. Well, that's, and why do they have such an interesting life, whereas the librarian down the street, you know, tends to work 9 to 5, go home and watch TV? Well, it's because the person who's a lot of fun is seeking out the fun. And they may be shirking responsibilities to bolster that fun. They may be delegating authority so that they can have the most fun. I was married to somebody like that. Always doing the fun stuff, and the grunt work got put on everybody else. X bias. Okay.
No, I understand. So if the base is fixed because it's the snapshot at your birth, then would it stand to reason that if someone is going through that process of wanting to raise their consciousness, become more awake and aware, then that would be part of their chart, and all you would do is maybe you would be able to show them where and at what places along the way those events sort of took place? Because again, I want to go back to what you said earlier. This is not a predictive, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen to you tomorrow kind of thing.
Well, that's true. Listen, there was a time in history, through most of history, when life was a lot less complex than it is now. I mean, right now, we're making it up as we go along in virtually every segment of society and every segment of our lives. You know, so it was easier to predict what was going to happen because not as many things could happen, and for not as long. I mean, for example, marriage was easier to predict in a time when you were either married or single, and it could only happen during a certain age range. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now there's cohabitation and domestic partnership contracts and serial monogamy and polyamory, and it can happen at any time in life for any reason and may or may not bring in property from the other person. So, yes, I mean, it is harder to predict a marriage now because the planetary transits that would have predicted it 200 years ago, well, maybe they go down to the courthouse and they sign a cohabitation agreement now. Maybe that is what that transit is causing now, mm-hmm. whereas in the past, it was either or. So mm-hmm. just in general, we live in a time when the number of options we have about everything is just astounding. However, there is a certain to the chart, and I define fate as the natural unfolding process. So each part of the chart unfolds in a way that makes sense. The story of the person doesn't just change dramatically for no reason.
Correct.
So while it isn't predictive, you can make some bets based upon what the likely outcomes are going to be. For instance, okay, let's take something simple. You're born a Gemini. So you'll have a love of talking and of staying young and getting the story across because they're natural reporters and gathering information. And your life is going to unfold around themes of curiosity and learning and interacting and developing a social network. And that stays the same throughout life. You don't just wake up one day and you're emotionally intense and a secretive Scorpio with a life that unfolds surrounding issues of power and transformation, you know. Each sun sign stays in its own lane for the duration. Every planet in the chart does that, and it has its own role and its own character. So things don't just suddenly appear. I mean, if you're driving down the street, you'll be in one of three lanes. You don't suddenly find yourself in a helicopter.
Not usually, no. Not usually, no. Although,
if you do, Richard, I want some of that.
You and me both. And if that's the case, why bother with the helicopter? Why not just find yourself where you want to be at any given moment? For example, I'm sitting here doing this interview. I want to be in Ireland right now. Poof! And now you're all by yourself and wondering where he went.
I have had those fantasies so many times. Wouldn't it be great just to teleport?
And there are those, there are those who do believe that that is entirely possible somewhere down the road. And even there have been writings, for example, my metaphysical primer, which is the autobiography of a yogi, where it talks about bilocation and so forth. And so it is something that certainly the ascended masters can do, but we haven't quite reached that level yet. We're still working on coping with the real world, you know, and so forth. This is fascinating. I know that there are those who live by the intuitives and the psychics. They live by astrologers. They live by the tarot card readers. What is your perspective as an astrologer for 30 plus years? What level of importance is best for us when it comes to the kind of information that we can gather and glean from a chart that you might prepare for us?
That's a toughie, because the number of, like, I have a client that I talk to probably 5 days a week, okay? And for whatever reason, she seems to need to have, she's Gemini, and so she needs to have information coming toward her. She needs this stimulation all the time. She needs that. It seems to me that she needs to see if she sort of agrees or if it feels right, and this helps give her life structure. I think any point at which a person is checking their brain at the door and asking, I saw this thing on YouTube where a woman was calling the psychic hotline and asking if she should buy a couch or have the ham sandwich or the chicken salad. And, you know, that's a bit much, you know, to rely on it to that extent.
And what's even worse is then, of course, she'll post it on Instagram or Twitter that this is the sandwich I just had that my astrologer told me I should eat. I mean, you know, come on. You know.
Hey, those are the people I defriend. You know, I had somebody on my Facebook page in the very beginning who was just posting things like, okay, I'm going to class. Oh, having fries. Oh, you know, and it was so boring, and so I defriended her. I didn't know her real well, and she starts asking everyone, well, why did Joy defriend me? Why am I no longer her friend? And I'll tell you why I wasn't her friend. I was bored stiff. I was looking, and plus it was the same message every day. Now, this is one of the things about people who like change. We get bored easily. So that is something that's sort of a negative to enjoying change. We actually need it.
You know, it's I used to have a Facebook page twice. I had it once. I got some news through it that I didn't care for. You know, because it was disturbing because it was the passing of one of my, I'll call him heroes of broadcasting. And it wasn't that you know, he had done anything inappropriate to anybody. It wasn't one of those. It was the way that he and his wife ended their lives. And then a few years later, I re-signed up figuring, okay, I'll do this for my radio program and podcast. And it just became so ridiculous to the point of, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep up with it. So I got rid of it for the second and last time because I thought, wait a minute. First of all, I have a website. Second of all, I have these podcasts. They're going out all over the place. I've sent out the RSS feed to all kinds of different places. My guests are distributing that information. And so I'm, and in less than 2 years, I have to tell you that as of this program, we are at 10,700 listens in less than 2 years. Which is, to me, I like the number. It looks pretty cool. Whether
that's a nice one.
Whether it means anything, I don't know. You know, but I think too that if we would just step away from that, the social media, step away from the news and that information that we're getting bombarded with every day.
We're addicted to it. Oh, you know, it causes dopamine rise, so it's like getting a hit of cocaine.
Well, there are those who like cocaine and...
I have noticed that I spend entirely too much time at the computer, and it is ridiculous. And so, I mean, part of it is talking to clients, and part of it is just indulgence. And I think to myself, you know, I ought to just take a couple of hours away. So yesterday I went to the doctor, and then I walked around town, and I got some sunlight, and I was blinking like a vampire. You know, I'm pale because I don't get any sun. I needed some vitamin D.
There you go.
You know, and I noticed that my knee was hurting, so I think I'm getting arthritis from sitting. I move my legs up and down a little bit just so I don't get blood clots, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
No, it's good for us. Just to take, okay, so I'm watching this show on the computer, of course, and it was these two couples that got sent to Mexico for a couple of days, and one of the couples didn't get to take their devices, and the other couple got to take their devices, and guess which couple remembered nothing about Mexico?
The ones who got to take
with their devices,
yes.
They had no idea what happened. They knew what haircut Demi Moore got while they were gone.
Which is so important. We need to have that information. Well, and it's really interesting, too, because I remember the first experience that I had with somebody coming into to the radio station where I work. They were here with another person doing some voice work. And they sat there with their phone, and they were texting or whatever it was they were doing. And I said, "Would you put that down?" She says, "No, I can do both." I said, "No, no, no, you don't understand. I didn't put it quite like this, but you're in my house. And in my house, we focus on what we're doing. Put it in your purse," which she finally did.
Listen, I have a story about this, and that is I had somebody watch my cats, right? Well, I went to Houston recently, and while I was giving her the orientation of how to operate the house and what to do with the cats, she was looking at her phone quite a bit.
Oh.
And at one point I said, "Well, let me have your phone." And she said, "No, no, I can do both. I'm a multitasker." You know what the actual percentage of super taskers is? 5%.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 20 people can actually do two things at once. Everybody else is way overestimating their abilities. Well, when I came home, the entire house was full of mosquitoes because the point at which I told her, "Open the back door quickly, let the cat out, and put the door back because there's mosquitoes outside," she was looking at her phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so she got all bitten up, and when I got back 10 days later, I actually never saw her again because I think she got so bitten up and so tired of the mosquitoes that, I mean, I literally have not seen her since. Mm. And it was because she was looking at her phone. She had left the door open for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. I find, yeah.
And that's when I thought, oh, that damn phone, you know?
Well, and again, we're going to far field, but I will just share one final thing with you on that note.
Right.
There are people, for example, who will spend $200, $300, $500 on a ticket to a concert, someone they couldn't wait to see. And what are they doing? They're video recording it on their phone. They're watching their small little screen of the recording they're making of the artist that they paid $500 a ticket to see. And I just think, come on, how much of this, how much do there's been a statistic, and this is also another sidebar, that every day on the planet, I believe it's in the neighborhood of multi-billions of pictures are taken that will never be seen again. When was the last time you went through your phone, your picture folder, you know, your pics folder, to see what was there? I mean, I've got pics.
A couple of days ago.
Yeah, well, but I mean, all of them.
Some of them I hadn't seen in years.
Yeah. I scroll back, and I have pictures there when we had overcast skies out at the marina, and I was walking on the breakwater. And I can see them now in my head because I remember that particular day when I was doing that. And great pictures. I really enjoy the memories. But who else has seen them? Nobody. Nobody else has seen them. And I never put anything like that up on Facebook. That was the other thing, too, about Facebook. I never liked anything on Facebook. I didn't want to get, and I never friended anybody I did not know. Never. I just wouldn't do it. And one of the things...
That tends to be the tip, especially for women, you know, that tends to be the typical policy to not friend people you don't know.
I had a buddy who went to dinner with his girlfriend. This guy walked up to him and said, hi. He didn't know who this guy was. He said, oh, yeah, you friended me on Facebook. Okay. And he had no clue as to who this guy was. So, yeah, there's some ups and downs in that regard. But again, I've also seen some incredible, great uses of social media. A medical doctor in New York, there was actually a documentary on Netflix about this, where there were people who would go to their doctors and they couldn't even get a diagnosis because the doctors couldn't figure out what it was. Well, this gal comes along. And they agree to post their information up on social media through, this was through the New York Times website. And of course, this goes global. And all of a sudden, you're starting to get hits from people around the world who either have had this condition or are medical people who know of people who've had this condition. And
I heard about this.
Oh, and the one, now some of them were able not only to get a diagnosis, but even to get treatment towards a cure or relief. But what was really profound, there was one gal who got a diagnosis, couldn't figure out how to solve the problem. She didn't care. What she wanted was a diagnosis more than anything else. If they would just tell her what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And at least she got that. So obviously there are some good uses of social media, and I don't want to take that away from folks. But, you know, you do have to be careful. Joy, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and for sharing your insights into astrology and the different aspects of astrology. And certainly,
it was my pleasure, Richard. I appreciate the opportunity.
We sure could go through the 12 signs of the zodiac to get characteristics thereof, but I think people can find a lot of that online. But they can also find you online, both at Facebook as well as on YouTube. And folks, the YouTube and Facebook are Cosmic Arts Astrological Services. And that's right, services. Now, how often do you post a video? Once a week?
Once every 2 weeks on average.
Okay. And the information contained in those videos is of what nature? Because obviously you're not giving readings for individuals.
No. In fact, what I decided to do was create a sort of video textbook, because astrology is a topic that is very chaotically taught and learned. And I went on, this is why I started the video series, which is called Secrets from an Astrologer's Desk, because there seem to be so many holes. I mean, there's no organized person who is starting from the beginning and going to the end. And so I thought, okay, that's a niche I can fill. So I start with the most basic, and I'm an astrology teacher, and then the readings come out of the fact that people are learning astrology. Mm. But it's all very organized, and it'll be a video textbook at the end, and it's also for the general audience, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, things do double as pure entertainment.
So,
but that's the basic idea, is a video textbook. Yeah.
So go to Cosmic Arts Astrological Services on YouTube to get more information. And is there, I know you don't have a website per se,
no.
Just Facebook and YouTube, but how would people touch base with you?
Okay, well, all of my contact information is at the end of every video, but the best way to get a reading or to discuss astrology is to start a chat with me on Facebook at Cosmic Arts Astrological Services, or if you have letters, inquiries, or something to say, it's Cosmic Arts New Mexico, that's fully spelled out, mm-hmm. Cosmic Arts New Mexico at gmail.com.
Cosmic Arts New Mexico at gmail.com. Thank you for not incorporating Albuquerque, New Mexico in that, because that's a tough one to spell.
Right. We just say ABQ.
There you go.
That's
the easiest way to do it.
Shorten it.
Before we let you go, first of all, should you find yourself out here on the Central Coast in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue our conversation, because certainly there is more to talk about. And
well, thank you, Richard. I hope to see you soon.
I have three final questions for you. I ask all of my guests these questions. You may have answered them in some fashion during the interview, but I like to ask them pointedly. And the first one is, who is Joy Walensky?
Wow. You had to end with a toughie like that. I believe that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. I think the core of us is a sort of soul energy, and that we put on a personality like a suit of clothes, like a space suit. I make a connection to those little probes that go down into the ocean. You know, they're cute, they're yellow, they're kind of round, mm-hmm. they look like submarines, and they go 7 miles down into the Mariana Trench. And I've always had a sense that I'm a probe, that somehow this body is a probe that incarnates and explores and investigates and gathers, and then is pulled back up out of the water. So that's who I am.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Well, elevation of my own consciousness.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
It has something to do with authenticity and originality and experiencing life. Is my heart woven in with my soul?
Joy, again, thank you so much for being with us here on the program. And again, we do look forward to having a continuation of this conversation, maybe when the next pagan holiday rolls around later in the year.
Okay, count me in.
All right,
I'll be here.
You bet. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and I thank you for listening. Be sure to go to the podcast pages, SoundCloud, iTunes, and so forth. If you can support us, thank you so much. And if you'd like a copy of my book, Choices, then send me an email at tmys@richarddugan.com. That's TMYS for Tell Me Your Story. And put in the subject line Choices, and we will make arrangements to get a copy of that to you. Until next time, love, Talal.